Chapter 56. The Black Range Rover pulled up at the side of the road. Luke was driving. The Major was in the front passenger seat, and Travis and Wheeler were in the back. Gannon took an airwave radio from his pocket and spoke to the police commander, who was parked up 100 yards away with an armed response vehicle and a Mercedes Sprinter van belonging to the Territorial Support Group, the Met's heavy mob. Two ambulances were also on standby. The Major told the commander that his people were in place and that they intended to move in within the next 15 minutes. The Volvo parked a short distance away. Reynolds and Coleman got out and walked over to the Range Rover. The Major, Travis and Wheeler joined them on the pavement, and the Major opened the car door. There were 5 black nylon holdalls in a line. The men took one each. The Major closed the door and checked his watch.
"We go in exactly 14 minutes," he said.
He looked at Coleman.
"You listen for our charge. You go in immediately."
"Got it, boss," said Coleman.
He and Reynolds walked away towards the alley that led to the rear of the terrace. Gannon nodded at Travis and Wheeler, and the 3 men headed for the house. There were lights on in the downstairs room, which was good news and bad news. It meant that the house was occupied, but it also meant that at least one of the men inside was close to the front door, and they would have to keep any noise to an absolute minimum. There was a tiny garden that had been paved over and was now used as a storage area for rubbish bins. The Major kept checking his watch, as if that would make the time pass more quickly. It didn't. The minutes crawled by. Eventually, there were 2 minutes to go. He nodded at Travis, who knelt down and unzipped his holdall. He took out a wooden frame, about 12 inches square, onto which had been taped C4 explosives. The shaped charge was designed to blow out a lock, as opposed to the large version that the SAS often used, which would take out a complete door. There were adhesive strips on one side of the frame, and Travis peeled off the protective cover and pressed it around the lock. The detonator was kept separately, and he inserted it into one side of the charge, then ran the wires out so that he could get 6 feet away. He took his Glock from his holster with his right hand and held the detonator in his left, then nodded at the Major to show that he was ready. The Major and Wheeler opened their holdalls and took out their guns, CQB carbines manufactured by Colt Canada. The guns had 10-inch barrels and telescoping stocks, which made them perfect for close protection work and room clearing. And they had replaced the MP5 submachine guns that the SAS used to use. The carbines had cylindrical suppressors on the ends of their barrels. They wouldn't make the weapons silent, but they would cut down on a lot of the noise. Both men had flashbang grenades, and they shoved one into each pocket of their jackets. Gannon took a final look at his watch and then nodded at Travis. Travis flashed the Major a tight smile, turned his head away from the door, and pressed the trigger. There was a loud bang and a small cloud of white smoke, and when they looked back, the door was hanging on its hinges. Almost immediately, he heard a muffled bang from the rear of the house. The Major kicked the door hard, and it fell back with the sound of splintering wood. He took 3 quick steps into the hall and turned to the left. He had the CQB up to his shoulder and his finger on the trigger. He saw movement, then a man appeared holding a handgun. The Major fired twice, a double tap to the chest. As the man fell to the ground, Gannon stepped into the room to give Wheeler a clear view of the hallway. He kept his gun to his shoulder as he swept the room with his eyes.
"Clear!"
he shouted. He heard 2 shots from the kitchen and turned back to the doorway. Wheeler was moving down the hallway. The Major headed out of the sitting room. There was a body on the floor by the kitchen door. Reynolds was in the middle of the kitchen, his carbine up to his shoulder.
"Clear!"
shouted Reynolds. Wheeler had paused and was swinging his carbine around. There were stairs to the right, 2 bodies accounted for, and at least 1 more still in the house. Wheeler took a step towards the stairs, but the Major stopped him with a hiss. Gannon would never ask anyone to do something he wouldn't do himself, and this was very much his operation. He put his foot on the first step and started up, keeping close to the wall to minimize any noise. The stairs were carpeted and in good shape, so he made no noise as he ascended. Wheeler had moved along the hallway so that he could cover the upper landing. Reynolds followed the Major upstairs, keeping plenty of distance between them. If there was anyone upstairs, they would have been certain to have heard the shaped charges going off and the gunshots. There hadn't been any shots from the upper floor, so the Major hoped that Mrs. Hurst and her child were okay. He saw movement at the top of the stairs and his finger tightened on his trigger, but he couldn't get a clear shot. Wheeler clearly didn't have a problem acquiring a target and fired twice. The two shots were followed almost immediately by a loud groan and a man pitched forward, a handgun clattering to the floor. Three down. The phone records had spotted three phones, but the Major didn't let his guard down. He continued to move up the stairs, with Reynolds close behind. He reached the top. There was a man face down on the landing, a Glock on the carpet by his head. Blood was pooling around his chest. The Major kept low as he ducked around the corner. There was an open door behind the body. He ducked back and looked right. Two more doors in that direction. One was open and seemed to be the bathroom. The other was closed. A second bedroom, maybe? He motioned for Reynolds to move to the right, then began moving himself, stepping carefully over the body and crouching low to make himself as small a target as possible. The bedroom door was ajar, but all he could see was a dressing table. There was a large mirror, but the only thing reflected in it was the blue curtains. Gannon was breathing evenly and steadily, his eyes focused on the end of the barrel and the view beyond. He moved towards the door, took his left hand off the gun, and pushed the door gently. It swung open. He took two quick steps forward and turned to his right. There was a figure there. Two figures. In less than a second, he had processed the visuals and held his fire. There was a man with a square jaw and a crew cut, holding a gun to the neck of a bound and gagged woman. A child was lying on the bed, also bound and gagged. The woman was struggling, but the man had his left arm around her neck. Her fear-filled eyes stared at the Major in horror. He knew he was an intimidating sight with the carbine at his shoulder, but the man didn't seem fazed.
"You need to get the fuck out of the room or the woman dies," said the man, his voice flat and emotionless, almost mechanical.
His gun was a Glock 19, the 9mm compact handgun that was favored by undercover cops and concealed carriers around the world. Not that the model or caliber mattered. That close to the target, any gun would fire a fatal shot. The man's finger was already on the trigger. There was no safety on the Glock and a trigger pull of about 5 pounds. It wouldn't take much for the gun to go off.
"I'm staying right where I am," said Gannon.
"Then the woman dies."
"And immediately after that, you die. So the exercise seems a bit pointless, doesn't it?"
He was aiming in the centre of the man's face. The man was over 6 feet tall, and Mrs. Hurst was a little over 5'2", so there was no way she was ever going to provide complete cover. If this was an exercise in the killing house back in Hereford, Gannon would have already put two shots in the target's face. But this wasn't the killing house, and it wasn't an exercise.
"What's your name?" asked the Major.
"Zack."
"American?"
Zack nodded.
"You need to back away now, or the woman dies."
"That's not going to happen, Zack. You former Special Forces?"
Zack's eyes tightened, then he nodded.
"SEAL? Delta?"
"Delta."
"Okay, then you know there's no way we just let you walk out of here. Not after everything that's happened. We want to keep collateral damage to a minimum, obviously. But there are four men behind me, and there's only one way out. Killing Amanda there doesn't make your situation any better. In fact, it makes it worse, because the moment you pull that trigger, I will put two rounds in your head. You have my word on that."
Zack swallowed.
"So I'm fucked. No matter how this pans out, I'm fucked."
"No, you're not fucked, Zack. You're in a fucked up situation. But if you handle it right, you can get out of it. You haven't killed anyone yet, Zack. The situation is salvageable."
"Please let me go,"
sobbed Mrs. Hurst through the gag. It muffled what she was saying, but the Major could pick up the gist.
"I haven't done anything,"
she said. The Major kept his gun trained on Zack's face. He had a clear shot and was reasonably sure that if he pulled the trigger, he could take the American out before the American could kill his hostage. but there was no rush, and the longer that Zack talked, the less likely he was to shoot her.
Amanda, it's okay, said the Major. Zack here doesn't want to hurt anybody. He knows you're a mum, and he's got a mum too, and he wouldn't want anyone hurting her. He's a professional. He knows that men don't go around killing women and children. Isn't that right, Zack?
Zack didn't answer. Wheeler moved behind the Major, and Zack stiffened. His finger tightened on the trigger.
Give me room here, Chris, said the Major,
without taking his eyes off Zack.
Everything is okay.
Roger that, boss, said Wheeler, and he backed down the hallway.
I'm so fucked, said Zack.
You keep saying that, but it's not true. Just drop your gun and let Mrs. Hurst go, and we can all walk out of here.
Zack shook his head.
You don't understand, he said. The people I work for, they'll kill me in a heartbeat. Me and everyone I love, they're animals.
Why would they kill you, Zack?
Because I failed. If I'm still alive at the end of this, they'll come for me and my family.
He gritted his teeth. The Major could see the American's eyes start to mist over.
Zack, you need to listen to me and listen good, said Gannon. You can walk out of here with us and no one needs to know that you didn't die with everyone else. There are three bodies outside, and we can just as easily say that there are four. Your name will be released as one of the casualties.
Then what?
Then you cooperate. You tell the powers that be what they want to know, and they put you in witness protection.
The people I work for, they can find anyone. They can find anyone, and they can kill anyone. If I help you, everyone I love will die.
It's your best shot, Zack. It's the best way of unfucking your fucked up situation. And I know you're looking for a way out, because if you weren't, you'd already have pulled the trigger. You're a decent guy, Zack, I can tell that. You don't get into Delta by being an arsehole, and we both know Delta don't kill women and children.
Zack swallowed, and his Adam's apple bobbed up and down, as if it had a life of its own. He was having trouble swallowing, the Major could see. His mouth had gone dry, but his finger was still tight on the trigger. Gannon had an even clearer shot now that Mrs. Hurst had turned her head away from her captor. One squeeze of the trigger, and it would all be over.
Amanda hasn't done anything to hurt you, Zack. Killing her would be plain wrong. And look at her daughter. Do you want the last memory she has of her mum to be you blowing her head off?
I am F-U-B-A-R. Fucked up beyond all repair.
But killing a mum in front of her kid doesn't make it any less fucked up, Zack. We can get you out of this. We can take you in. Everyone will think you died here.
You've done this before?
The Major nodded. Several times, he said.
If ever you hear about the SAS being involved in a shootout and that all the bad guys were killed, you can pretty much bet your bottom dollar that at least one of the bad guys was taken to a place of safety. My orders are to take back at least one source, and you're the only one left. Put down your gun, and we're out of here.
Zack tried to swallow again. Just put the gun down, Zack.
How can I trust you? What's to stop you putting a bullet in my head as soon as I let her go?
Zack, I've had a clear shot for the last 30 seconds, said the Major. I could drop you now before you had a chance to pull your trigger. But I don't want you hurt. I want you to walk out of here and help us bring down the bastards who hired you.
Zack stared at Gannon for several seconds, then slid his finger off the trigger and held the gun up in the air. He released his grip on Mrs. Hurst, who staggered over to the bed and sat down. Gannon kept his carbine trained on the American's face.
Put the gun on the floor, Zack. Nice and slowly, he said.
Zack stared at him, but the gun stayed where it was. The Major could see the American's brain racing as it tried to process what was happening. Zack was considering all his options. If he died in that room, it would be over. Over for him, sure, but his family wouldn't be in danger. If he lived, if he cooperated, he would spend the rest of his life in witness protection, and his family would be forever in danger. That was what Zack was considering as he held the gun aloft. A quick death now, or an uncertain future. Gannon said nothing,
that kept his finger on the trigger, and the sights aimed at Zack's head. There was nothing else he could say. It was now up to Zack. It was his call. Zack swallowed again, then slowly nodded. He let the gun swivel in his hand so that he was holding it by the grip with his finger and thumb. The major relaxed a little, but stayed alert.
"We're good,"
said Zack, as he bent at the knees and slowly placed the gun on the floor. Then he straightened up and put his hands behind his head.
"Can you come, Chris?"
said the major, stepping to the side but keeping his weapon aimed at the American. Wheeler entered the room. He let his carbine hang on its sling as he used a plastic tie to bind Zack's wrists. Only when the American's wrists were bound behind his back did the major relax.
"It's going to be fine, Zack," he said. "We'll take you back to our barracks, and we'll take it from there."
Zack nodded and forced a smile, but he didn't say anything as Wheeler took him out. The major let his weapon swing from its sling as he took a Swiss army knife from his pocket. He flicked the main blade open and used it to cut the duct tape from around Mrs. Hurst's wrists. As she untied the gag around her mouth, Gannon cut the tape from her daughter's wrists and ankles. Mrs. Hurst threw herself at her daughter and hugged her, then undid her gag.
"You're okay now, Mrs. Hurst," said Gannon. "Everything is fine."
Mrs. Hurst blinked away her tears.
"No, it's not fine," she said. "Where's Marty?"
"We're not sure. We're looking for him now. When was the last time you saw him?"
"A week ago. I spoke to him on the phone when they took us. They're forcing him to do something, but I don't know what it is."
"Don't worry about it. We're looking for him as we speak."
"I want to go home,"
said Mrs. Hurst, holding her daughter to her chest.
"Soon," said Gannon. "We're going to take you to our barracks, and you can have a shower, and we'll see if we can get you some fresh clothes, and we need to talk to you. But as soon as that's done, we'll have you back in Hereford."
He took out his mobile phone.
"I need you to record a message for him, okay? So that I can show him that you're all right."
She nodded again and forced a smile. He pressed the button to record video and nodded for her to speak.
"Marty, honey, we're okay," she said.
She kissed her daughter on the head.
"Sophie's fine too, though we're a bit shaken up. I'm so sorry what we've put you through, honey. I know this has been a nightmare for you, but everything is okay now. We're safe, and they're going to take us back to Hereford soon. I miss you so much."
"Me too, Daddy," said Sophie. "Come and see us, please. I was scared, but everything is okay now."
The major ended the recording and thanked them. Mrs. Hurst nodded tearfully.
"And what about Marty?"
"Like I said, we're looking for him. As soon as we've found him, we'll have you back together again."
He smiled reassuringly, but he knew that the chances of the Hurst family living happily ever after were slim to none.